Welcome to A Path Home. This is the podcast where we demystify the tasks related to after-death care through hearing stories from people who have cared for their own deceased loved ones at home. I'm your host, Sarah Cruz. I'm the director of Heartland Prairie Cemetery, a home funeral guide, death educator, and a member of the National Home Funeral Alliance. Today, I have a conversation with Carolyn Dane Bostel in northern Minnesota. Carolyn's mom, Betty, lived with Carolyn and her husband for several years prior to being moved into a memory care facility due to Alzheimer's disease. Betty died in December of 2023. Carolyn describes how they brought her body back to their cabin, followed by a natural burial on their own land, and the logistics involved in getting it all arranged. As usual, I started the conversation by asking Carolyn to tell me about her mom.
Her name is Betty, and she was born in Michigan. She met my dad at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, and they were married in 1954. And then their friends were having babies, but they didn't have babies for quite a while. It just, there were some issues that they had. So that was kind of a miracle that my sister and I were born at all. And then we were raised in Evanston, Illinois, and my mom was a stay-at-home mom, and then she became an RN when I was in high school. And we were very involved in our church. It's like I had a whole family of adults who were interested in my life, and so that was good. She loved bird watching and riding her bicycle. Like, that's kind of what she did for her mental health. You know, she'd take her bike. Evanston it's a college town. It's where Northwestern University is. But it's also right on Lake Michigan. So she would take her bike and ride down to Lake Michigan and just be in the air by the water. And that was the way that she did self-care. My dad was a school teacher. And when he retired, we ended up moving to Minnesota. My parents moved to northern Minnesota, and again, Betty just kind of involved with friends in the town and in the church there, and still loving her walks. She would go for walks with dogs in the woods. My uncle had some black labs, and they would love to go with her in the woods. And she was just a very quiet, kind woman. Everybody who met her, you know, up until her last years, their comment to me would be, "I love your mom's smile." She did smile a lot. She smiled all the time. And she was a beautiful soprano singer. So she was just a very kind, loving spirit, good with kids. Around 2010, so my dad had passed away in 2001. My mom was remarried. And I started noticing some signs of memory loss. And so kind of started to help her more at that point. And I needed to actually help my stepdad out more too. They would vacation with us. I started, you know, gradually being more involved in finances or medications and doctor's sure. appointments and such. So it was kind of like a long journey with my mom. My stepdad passed away in 2016. And at that point, we brought my mom into our home and she lived with us. And then COVID hit in 2020 and it was getting about to the place where we would have moved her into memory care. But actually, the first person to pass away in Minnesota was at the facility that we were considering for my mom. And so it just wasn't the right time to move her. So we ended up moving up to Ely at that time with her to try and keep her safe from the pandemic. And she was a wanderer kind of at that point. She always thought like my dad was supposed to come pick her up or something. So she always wanted to go outside. And, you know, sometimes I'd see her leave and just text my husband, "Will you go will you go get my mom? She left. And she really, wow. So the nice thing is that we kind of bought this cabin up here because I wanted for her to be in nature in her final chapters of her life.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the kind of person that she was. She just loved God. She loved nature.
Yeah, she gravitated towards being outdoors and
the whole time.
Again, and then and birds, and it sounds like she exactly. just really needed to be in nature. So
yes.
I love that you brought mm-hmm. her there.
Yeah.
Long winters, but
that's true, but we did fine indoors, and then we put these tracks things on her shoes, try and get some grip and walk with her. I mean,
oh yeah.
You know, if it was snowy or whatever, and take her to church or whatever. We had a glider in the living room and a bird feeder out the window. So she just really enjoyed living with us. It was,
yeah.
And we did too. You know, it was hard, but it was also really meaningful. And so that was a journey. And then she did wander and get hurt one time. And, you know, as the winters were really hard, there was a point where we felt like she should go into the memory care. And there is one memory care unit here in Ely. And so we got her in there. And so it was wonderful. She was only about 10 or 15 minutes away. We could still see her and take her to church and all that stuff. And we did. We took her to church like till the end. We, you know, that was our
tradition. That's so great.
Mm-hmm.
That means a lot.
Yeah.
Then you and your husband also have the knowledge that she's safe. She's got 24/7 care.
Right.
And yeah, that's so good.
Yeah. So she had lived with us for 5.5 years, and we were, I mean, we had only been married about 5 years when she moved in with us. So, you know, on all of our dates, she would come with, and, you know, the three nice. Of us. And I was so thankful that my husband actually had his grandmother living with them part of the time when he was a child. And so when my stepdad went into the hospital, I said, "Mom, do you want to, you know, go back to your apartment, or do you want to come live with us?" And she said she wanted to come live with us. And my husband was all for that. And I'm so thankful.
Yeah.
That was huge.
That is huge. Good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd make her breakfast. And yeah. So he formed a relationship with her too, which was really lovely. I think she liked him more than she liked me. she was very much more trusting of him. So sometimes, he was very helpful.
That's great.
So she was 88 when she passed, and losing weight. She did get COVID in the spring, and I feel like she didn't really bounce back well from that. You know, she lost a lot of weight, and then she was having more trouble walking. But the whole time, like, she was just this kind, gentle person. Like, so I feel really blessed, because I know sometimes people's personalities change with that disorder. But for her, she just stayed kind and even sometimes smiley. You know, her smile is still what people remember about her. So
this is still really fresh, since it happened very recently, beginning of December.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not having any problems talking about it. I haven't been super grief stricken, and, you know, maybe it hasn't hit me yet. But also, I think that we just had such a good experience, and the way that we kind of took care of her at the end, I felt was just so natural, and so the way that helped me to just see the whole thing through. And I'm happy about it. Like, I feel joyful about it.
So how did you know that you could approach her death in that way and care for her, provide the after death care?
Yeah. Well, so my mom was a conservationist. When I was 8 years old, she and my dad took me and my sister to the Colorado YMCA camp in Estes Park for a conservation summit. I mean, so just longtime conservation people. They cared for the earth. My dad was the groundskeeper at our church that we lived next door to and, you know, planted flowers. He planted wildflowers where he lived, you know, just very environmentally friendly people. So I don't remember when the first time the thought hit me that this was an option, but I did look it up, and the state of Minnesota has a booklet called Choices, and home funerals, home burial, all of those things are options for Minnesotans. So at that time, when I found that out, I just knew that's what we should do for my mom as kind of a final, this is my gift to the earth. This is my environmental, you know, I don't want to put chemicals in the ground. I don't want us, you know, my sister would say, I don't want my most expensive piece of furniture to be my coffin. And so then I checked with the cemetery where my dad is buried, which is about 4 hours away, and they would not allow a natural burial, which was sad because my mom and dad had plots there. But for my sister and I, it made more sense to do the green burial than to have her be buried 4 hours away from anybody, you know, even farther than that from any of her people. So anyway, it just made sense for us.
Sure.
And so when I found out that I did have the choice to have a home funeral, to bury her naturally, I had to find out, okay, how do I go about doing that? And what we needed to do was to have a survey done on our property and to have a private cemetery put onto our property, you know, register it with the county.
So you did the burial there on your own property?
Yes, we did.
I had thought that perhaps you had found a natural burial ground near you, but you went through all the steps.
Went through all the steps to get this little cemetery put on our property. And we don't have a big chunk of property. We have 1.4 acres, so it's not huge, but it's perfect.
And that is so,
you know,
perfect.
I can see her out of one of the windows upstairs. You know, I can look down into that part of the woods, and it's just very special.
In terms of the logistics of that, was it pretty straightforward going through the zoning department and applying for this family cemetery on your land?
There were challenges and hoops for sure. My township has a supervisory board of 3 people. It was not something that the township was open to. And what I found out was there were no ordinances about private cemeteries. And I talked to other people who have done this, had a cemetery put onto their property, and they said, well, we just, you know, had the survey done and then registered that with the county. And so I was like, well, why am I messing around with these 3 guys then?
Right.
I just went and hired a survey company, and the surveyor told me that the township didn't have the right to tell me that I could or couldn't do this. And the township told me that they have no ordinances against it. And so I went with that.
That's a nice little loophole.
Yeah. Well, I think they just never heard of it. You know, I think they were, right. I think they're just very stuck in tradition, and anything new or green or right. natural are buzzwords that, oh, no, we aren't going to do that. We're, you know, we can't do that. Right. In fact, one of the board supervisors or whatever people, when I called to ask about it, he said he had no idea. So he called the funeral director to ask. And the funeral director said, no, we couldn't do that. And I just laughed.
Oh, my
gosh. I said, well, of course he's going to say that.
Right.
I mean, oh, yeah. Anyway, I didn't. Yeah, that didn't mean anything to me.
Yeah. So much misinformation out there.
Exactly. So my mom at that time, we had gotten her put onto hospice, and she wasn't on hospice very long, just a 2 or 3 weeks, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was more like 6 weeks, but not very long. And that was wonderful. I really loved the hospice people. And I made it clear once I had the cemetery plotted on my plat, which is what it is. That's what you register with the county. Once I had that cemetery, and you know, at first they drew it kind of really small, and I'm like, no, let's make it a little bigger. So it's actually 28 by 32 feet. So mm-hmm. I could now bury somebody else there if, you know, right. if or that's you could what be my family there. Wanted to do. Yeah. I could be buried there. Yeah, I didn't want to limit myself in that regard, you know, just have it be available if needed. Now, I do not live in a place that's convenient to dig a hole. My husband and I worked on that hole all summer long.
Wow. Lots of roots.
Very, very rocky soil. Like I said, we live in the Iron Range. So very rocky. And, you know, the biggest rock I pulled out of that hole by myself. And I felt very proud. And we had big, you know, piles of rocks around us. But there was sand also, you know, that came out of the ground as well. So we had that pile. And so when we were heading into winter, it was stressful because, you know, just the worry about how are we going to, you know, we don't have all this thawing equipment. What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. So what we did was we had the hole dug already. We covered it with pallets. And then we covered the pallets and the piles of sand with about 4 inches of straw. And then I put a black tarp over the whole thing, hoping that the sunshine would melt snow that were to fall or help us keep it, you know, from freezing, whatever. Anyway, it worked out.
How deep did you dig the hole? Approximately
42 inches is okay. The state requirement.
Okay.
So much shallower than a typical, you know, 6 foot type of a situation. Yeah. 42 inches is 3.5 feet. Mm-hmm. So we just made sure that we were 42 inches. Now, if you go deeper, the decomposition is not going to go as well. And so, you know, people are freaked out. They're not really aware of this very much, it seems. So they're like, oh, animals, you know, the bears are going to dig it up, or wolves are going to dig it up or something. And that is just a fear. There was so much fear that people had about it when I would talk with them about it. Part of the reason I wanted to, you know, that this issue has become important to me because it's just so... Yeah, so right. And so much misinformation, like you said. Mm-hmm. So I let hospice know and I let the memory care center know that I was going to be doing this. I said, we are planning a home funeral, so we will not be calling the funeral director. You know, so you don't want somebody who thinks they're doing you a favor to call on your behalf or something.
Right.
When you aren't. You know, that's not what you want. You know, they would, I think, pressure you then at that point. So
they may not have known that this was you know, within your legal rights either.
They didn't. I had to provide them this booklet called Choices. In Minnesota, it's about 20 pages and it tells you what your options are. And I provided that to them because, yeah, they were afraid, you know, what is our, you know, I'm sure like anybody would be, what is my responsibility here? And so I did provide that. And then for hospice, you know, they're like, how can we help you? And that, you know, there wasn't that much they could do at that time, but they could, you know, I said the it's very important to me that her end of life and the type of, you know, way that we want to do that, that that goes according to plan. And so I just made that, you know, it's just like a birth plan, you know, you want to make those who are going to be helping you or coping at the end more aware of what you want. Exactly. So that's very important. That was an important part of it. And then when they called me the Thursday morning at 7 a.m. or something to let me know my mom was not doing well, I went there and that was like the start of my vigil with her. I had my husband pick up some of these candles that you don't light. You just kind of turn them and they're battery operated. And, you know, I just tried to make a calm atmosphere in her room, you know, just kind of a nice scene for her. I also set up my laptop with a Zoom that anybody could come and visit with me or visit with my mom, because all of our family lives out of town or out of state. I tried to connect my mom with the important people in her life, like her sister who lives in Michigan. So we had a Zoom and I would hold the laptop so that they could see my mom and she could tell my mom that she loved her. And, you know, my aunt was doing all the talking at that point, but it was just really beautiful. Like people coming to, you know, her hospital room or something, you know,
coming
to visit.
Coming to the bedside.
People who wanted to say goodbye. And then in person, this part makes me want to cry. The people that would come to the room were the staff and staff that had worked with my mom in previous years. They would come in on their days off to come in and say goodbye to her and they would tell her how much they loved her. And that just was so meaningful to me to see that she was loved by the staff. I don't have a tissue. it was so cool. All these women that had cared for her.
That's so poignant.
Through those, you know, couple of years that she was at the memory care unit. Yeah, that was really cool. And then the pastor of our church also came twice during that time to be with her, pray with her. And that was really nice. Anyway, so I vigiled with her for 45 hours. And then at 4:30 in the morning on Saturday morning, the staff came in to adjust her. And while they adjusted her, she passed. And they said that happens a lot. Like they come in, there were four of them, and they moved her body, you know, so that she wouldn't have, they don't want them to have pain or to lay in one position for a long time or whatever. Anyway, and they asked me, do you want us to move her or not? Right. So that was nice. I felt like, so that was kind of like part of, they wanted to be respectful of me and our end of life plans. So I'm sure that they were, you know, cued in about my concerns anyway. And they were just wonderful. And they were like, yeah, I think that she may be gone. Anyway, I was there with them by her side and she kind of exhaled and then. And then we're all kind of standing around wondering.
Yeah, right. You know, will she inhale again or not?
Right. Because at that point, the breathing is so kind of not regular. And they can take a long time before taking a breath. One of the important things was I was really hoping my sister would get to see her before she passed. My sister lives in Illinois. So her and her husband hopped on a plane My husband had to drive 2 hours down to Duluth to get them. So that was a 4-hour round trip. And at 11 o'clock p.m. on Friday night, my mom started the death rattle. So mm-hmm. her, you know, it was more gurgly kind of, you're trying to keep their mouths moist. And then at some point they just can't handle any, you know, they can't swallow the water right. anymore or whatever. So then yeah. it gets into their lungs and then they have this death rattle, they call it. And I was so panicking because my sister wasn't there yet. And I'm texting them, you know, how far away are you guys? And I didn't want to tell them that this had just happened, but I was worried that they weren't going to make it. And they got there at 11:30 and my sister was able to spend some time with my mom and say goodbye. She didn't stay, but they got to say goodbye. And then she went back to the house. So at 4:30 in the morning, I'm calling and nobody's picking up. And I'm starting to panic at that point because I didn't want to move my mom's body while the residents were awake. So I had already kind of told the memory care center, I had already told them when I move her body, I'll do it at night. You know, so I don't want to freak people out or whatever. So anyway, so I thought it was such a gift that she passed away at 4:30 in the morning. I'm like, we'll get her out quick and that'll be great. We can have more time with her at home.
But everybody has the sound off on their phone.
Yeah, at first I couldn't reach anybody. They were just so exhausted. They couldn't hear their phones. Finally, I reached someone, one of the three of them, and they drove over. And we wrapped up my mom at that point in a quilt. And three of us carried her out to the car. I have a Toyota Highlander. So opened up the back, put the seats down. You know, the law in Minnesota is the body has to be flat, you know, lay flat and comfortably. You can't like bend them all up to get them into the vehicle. They have to lay flat. And they have to be private. It has to be enclosed. Like, I mean, I have seen on movies people having them in a flatbed truck, but that's not the way it works in Minnesota. They want, you know, they just for the respect, I guess, or privacy, you know, to have the body be in a vehicle that is enclosed. So mm-hmm. we made sure to do that. And so she was wrapped in a quilt. And put in the back of the car. And I think it was around 5:30 by the time we got her home. So it wasn't bad. Mm-hmm. And nobody was awake at the, you know, none of the residents had to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a part of life. But when you're confused and when you're scared, it's just not, I don't know. I didn't want to do that. So, and so then when we got her home, we had, in preparation for this, knowing nothing about this, I did a couple of home births, but I had never done home deaths. So in preparation for this, I had read every book by, oh, what is her name? She's like the talking mortician or something. Let me see what's her
name. Yeah, Caitlin Doughty.
Yes, that was her, Caitlin. Is it Doughty? Is that how you, I always said, thought it was Doughty, but okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming up with that because I was driving me nuts.
Ask a Mortician is her
yes,
YouTube.
Yes. I read every single Caitlin Doughty book, loved them, loved listening to her voice on audiobook. And I had also reached out to the National Home Funeral Alliance to learn, like there are videos from different organizations on how to do this. And there was one video that I liked very much called A Family Undertaking. It's a movie.
Oh yeah. That was on seen PBS that one. That's years a great ago. One. Yeah.
Yes.
Really good.
That's the one where I saw somebody in the back of a pickup truck. So somebody had said at some point, Tecna Ice was a good product. And I agree. It was a great product for this purpose. So Tecna Ice comes in sheets and you just order it off the internet and you soak them in warm water and they get puffy, kind of like a baby diaper. These cells mm-hmm. that are in the Tecna Ice get puffy. and you turn your freezer on as cold as it can go. And these things get so cold. And, you know, that's one thing I was kind of worried about. Like, what's the smell going to be like? What's it, you know, what do I need to do? So as soon as we got her home, I put her into the cotton dress that I wanted to her to wear. I actually bought it for the occasion. It's a floral print. It was just very cute, but all cotton. And we had a chuck under her, and I still had a depend on her just throughout the at-home part of the visitation. And we had her in her bedroom, which my husband and I, when we moved her in here, we asked her what color she wanted, and she kind of liked purple. So we painted it lavender, pictures of wolves on the walls, and just really beautiful little white quilt covering her, just like she's in bed, you know, except her mouth is open. And then with her eyes, you know, I did take a little bit of cotton from the tip of a Q-tip and roll it up in my thumbs and forefingers and kind of tucked it under her eyelids. Now, some people don't do that, and they just let the eyelids do what they're going to do, and that's fine. But that's what I chose to do. And I chose to not worry about her mouth. I mean, for some time during the summer, I was worried, what am I going to do? Am I going to tie it shut with a scarf? You know, and I decided, you know what? Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I vigiled with her for 45 hours and her mouth was open, and that didn't bother me at all.
Right.
That's just what people look like when they're breathing at night. Their right. mouths drop open.
Yeah.
So I just let that part go. But I did put her eyelids so that they, you know, just this tiny little bit of cotton kind of was enough to keep them closed. And it was, you know, like a little bit weird for me. I've never done anything like that before. I've never like been that intimate with a dead body before, but it was okay for me. So I had the Tecna Ice underneath a towel under her body. So one of the sheets was under like her chest and one of the sheets was like under her lower back. So I had a towel between the Tecna Ice and her body. Like I didn't want the Tecna Ice right up against her skin, even though I probably wasn't ever going to see her skin again because I'd already put her dress on. I just, for some reason, I wanted that towel in between there. And I didn't know if it would give off moisture or whatever as it
thawed. Right.
So
totally makes sense.
Yeah. And then on top, I laid a towel and then I put Tecna Ice on her chest and on her belly. And then I just covered her with the blankets and quilt. And it just looked like she was sleeping there. And it was beautiful. I cracked the window a little bit. It was December, so it was nice and cool in that room. I wanted it to be a nice experience for my kids and mm-hmm. and other people that were coming to see her for visitation. And my dogs, we have two Maltese. One of them lived with my mom for many years. And, you know, I sat with them on, there's a couch in there next to the bed. I sat on the couch and I was holding them. And the younger one just started crying like she wanted to see my mom so badly. And so I let them on the bed and they kind of sniffed around. They were kind of confused. They did what they would always do if they're in a bed with a person, just kind of like want to say hi. And then they just laid down and it was just kind of really cool. Like they just needed to see what's going on with grandma, you know? I took a little video of the one puppy kind of crying. It was just so sweet. And I know I'm personifying a little bit, but it just was sweet. Everything's sweet in that moment. I mean, that's just such a special time. I just can't even describe how special. It was almost like a wedding day or something where you're just on cloud nine. It was like, you know that something special is happening in this house. And there's just this feeling of something being different. And maybe it's some shock or something, but I remember everything. I don't think I was in shock. I think I was just like experiencing something really, really profound and meaningful. And I have four kids. I would say they each felt differently about it. And I invited all of them to go into grandma's bedroom to see her if they wanted to. They all ended up going in there at some point. I think one of them brought a grandchild in. Maybe one of them didn't. I don't quite remember about my little baby granddaughters, but you know, it was definitely a family thing. And then some friends came. I have two friends who are planning to have this kind of a burial themselves, who were very interested in coming. One, because they love me and my mom, but also I think they were very interested to see, how is this going to go, you know, for us? What is this like? You know, just people just aren't used to it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. wonderful that you were able to include them and invite everybody in at whatever their comfort level was. Maybe even if they're feeling a little fear or trepidation around it, you know, once you're in the presence of death and a dead body, it's not nearly as weird as you maybe thought it was going to be, mm-hmm. but it's more like, okay, this is okay. This is okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, several people, I don't know, half dozen or so people from the church came. And so it was really meaningful. I asked the pastor from our church. He was on board from the very beginning. He just like, yep, whatever you need. Like, even if we were going to do a green burial that was 4 hours away, he was willing to come and do that. So very, very cool pastor. So that felt good.
How did your sister respond to this whole event?
So she was the faraway sibling, which is hard. I know that's hard. And she was wonderful. Like, she was right there with me. Yeah, mom wouldn't want that. You know, as we're talking about this, you know, embalming and traditional funeral that we had done for our father 20 years ago or 23 years ago, right? So, mm-hmm. but just very, very different experience than this one.
Yeah.
It's more like, you know, this is women taking control. This is women expressing ourselves in a way, you know, like me and my sister, we were calling the shots, and that felt good too. Mm-hmm. Just growing up in a patriarchal society and, you know, church and all that, you know, that this felt so, so good and right.
Mm-hmm.
And so when my husband and my brother-in-law and I were loading my mom into the car, I asked my sister, would you take some pictures, you know, because I want to be able to help people in the future, maybe to be able to do this. So she took pictures.
Nice.
And then I had bought a shroud maybe in the spring of last year. And my sister did a lot of this crocheting of these little flowers and sewed them onto the shroud. And I had told my kids and my nibblings. Do you know what nibblings are?
I do not know what nibblings are.
Okay.
I was trying to guess.
We usually call them nieces and nephews and that thing. But now the gender appropriate way to say that is your nibblings.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I have not heard that term yet. I've learned something.
Yeah. Yeah. So one of my nibblings is non-binary. I had told my children and my nibblings that they could, you know, whatever they wanted to put on or in their grandma's shroud, that they could do that. And one of my daughters did a cross stitch. It was something like, may the road rise up to greet you or something like that, you know, just something really sweet. And so we pinned that to the shroud because we wanted it to be part of the shroud, but we also kind of wanted to keep it as a memorabilia. So so right before we buried her, we took that off of the shroud. But my son traced his hand and wrote something really sweet. I had Sharpies. Anybody in the visitation could write anything they wanted to on the shroud. So then right before you know, the processional or whatever, we carried her out of the house and over to where she was going to be buried. My sister, my brother-in-law, and my husband and I, you know, got Betty into the shroud and wrapped her in the shroud. Now, the shroud cost $325, and it's just a piece of, I don't know, cotton. Like,
yeah, muslin.
I mean, I think we could have buried her in the quilt, or we could have buried her in a sheet. It wouldn't have mattered. So don't spend the money if it's not a big deal to you. I think people buried in a quilt is just as beautiful as somebody buried in a shroud.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the one nice thing about the shroud is that it had three sets of handles. So my son-in-law, my son, my stepbrother, my brother-in-law, my husband, and then nobody else wanted to do it. So myself. So the six of us carried her out to where she was going to be buried. And
each took a handle.
Yep.
It's a little trickier with a simple shroud that doesn't have handles, like a quilt or a sheet. Often we'll use a burial board, like a piece of wood that has handles, but then that's a whole nother piece of the plan in terms of getting that together. So,
yes, my husband had pictured us using a board and ropes, but I just wanted to carry her out with the shroud. And let me say that that Tecna-Ice worked so well. Like, her body was super cold and, you know, very straight.
Yeah.
So that worked fine. We did lower her with the ropes, but we put the ropes through the handles and then lowered her that way and then pulled the ropes out. But I imagine there are different ways that you can do that. The one thing that my sister asked for, she said, if we're going to do this, Carolyn, I have to have permission to laugh. And I said, that's fine. I don't care if we laugh. Yeah. And I mean, it was just such a, you're breaking tradition in a way. So it feels funny.
Right. Yeah.
And so there were tears. There was laughter. It was all there. It was all. Yeah, all really good. We sang while we carried her out.
I actually love that that was your sister's like one request. It's like, yeah. Can there be some laughter and lightheartedness here? And it's like, well, of course, you know?
Yeah.
Because here we are sharing this amazing experience.
And you think in your mind, there's all this catastrophic thinking about what could go wrong. And then my sister and I would just say to each other, and we're just going to, you know, it's fine. It's just whatever happens, it's going to be fine. And it was. Anyway, that was really cool. And we sang a couple of songs. The pastor did a short sermon. And then we had, if people wanted to, you know, put a shovel of dirt in, that they could. And most people did. We also had dried flowers that people could throw in. We, you know, like, what are we going to do in the middle of winter with, you know, flowers and stuff? And we did go and buy one bouquet of flowers to have in her room for the visitation. And they were very pretty from the local flower shop. And a couple other people from out of state sent us a bouquet of flowers. And we dried those. I dried those. I think this spring I'll put those on her grave site.
Did you mark it with one of the big rocks that you brought out of the out of the grave?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what I want to do yet, but for the time being, I put rocks around it because there were so many rocks. So it's actually a circle of rocks right now, or an oval of rocks. And I did put some bulbs on it. I thought, you know, it'd be kind of fun to have some.
Yeah.
I don't know. Something
in the spring, they'll
come up in the spring. But as far as natural burial, I mean, eventually I want it to just look like the forest floor, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But I figured, you know, we can have some bulbs in there for now just to enjoy. And I bought a little bunny statue that's out there, and I put a bird feeder right at the head of where she's buried. Yes, she loved watching birds and we loved having bird feeders, but it's not the best thing to do to feed wildlife. So. So I struggled with that decision too, but I thought, well, I'm just going to, you know, have this here because to me, this seems really beautiful and reminds me of my mom.
Yeah, absolutely. This is such a great story because you've given so many details about all of the logistics and the planning to get to this place. And I'll often say to people, oh, you know, it's just going to require a little bit more planning, but you really worked on this for, it sounds like almost a year, you know, when you started digging the grave last summer and also just doing all the research to make sure that you could do this on your own land and getting the surveyor out there and then educating the hospice team and the folks at the memory care place. And, you know, it takes a lot of planning and doing, and I'm very impressed.
Oh, thank you.
Your dedication to all of that and creating this just absolutely beautiful ending for your mom.
Yeah. Kind of like planning for a home birth, like takes time too.
Right. It really does. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of astonishing. I mean, it isn't, because we've become so accustomed to handing this over to an industry who will just take care of everything. And we like to think of this as a return to a simpler time, but in these days, it requires a lot of planning. It's simpler to pick up the phone and call a funeral home and pay them $10,000 to do this for us. You know, it requires quite a bit of work.
That is true. I mean, it does take some pre-planning and a labor of love, you know, to follow through on all that.
Right. It just sounds like the whole thing was just exactly right.
Yes. Yeah, it was.
So you've mentioned that you would like to help other people understand what this could be like and what's possible. Are you thinking of, I don't know, giving workshops there in Ely? Or is it more of just the people in your circles, letting them know that this is what you did?
So I actually am scheduled to give a talk to a group of women. It's called Empower. It's a group in Ely that empowers people who identify as women with scholarships and, you know, different things like that. But we get together every month and usually there's a talk. In February, the talk is going to be about end of life stuff, but I'm not on that panel. But they're following it up with my presentation, which is going to be in March. And that will be, I'm going to show a family undertaking and talk about my experience with that group of people.
That's fantastic. That's a starting place.
If I can be of help, if I can help one person feel more comfortable about their journey, I would love to, because I feel so passionate about it.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Sarah.
A Path Home is a production of the National Home Funeral Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to educating and advocating for communities and families who choose to care for their own loved ones at death. Check out our website at homefuneralalliance.org. If you like this podcast, be sure to tell a friend and subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you would like to share your home funeral or natural burial experience on the podcast, please email me at podcast@homefuneralalliance.org. We'd love to hear from you. The music at the beginning and end of A Path Home is written and performed by Sarah Cruz. Our beautiful cover art is by Linda Curray. And until next time, remember the words of Ram Dass. We are all walking each other home.
I wanna be there to walk you home. I'll tend to your body, you'll tend to my soul. And if it happens the other way round, I know you're gently